Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. Happy Wednesday, everyone. I hope your week is going well so far. If you are not familiar with my show, I'm here every Wednesday at 9 a.m. and I've been doing this show since 2011. Get the Funk Out has a blog. You can visit it at getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org for more information. And I am thrilled to have my first guest joining us today. Danielle Crittenden is talking about her forthcoming book, Dispatches from Grief, A Mother's Journey Through the Unthinkable. Tina Brown has called this book a little masterpiece. And if you head over to the show blog, you'll learn more about it. I'm not going to give too much away, but it is a powerful narrative about something incredibly gut-wrenching that Danielle went through, and she is joining us now. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning, Janine.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And I can't even imagine sitting down to write this book. Could you tell listeners a little bit about it without giving too much away?
Okay, well, you know that there's an unhappy ending to it.
Yes,
so,
yes.
I'm a journalist by upbringing. I grew up literally in a newsroom with my parents, who were all reporters and journalists. And I learned from them that when something happens to you, you write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the tragedy of our daughter, Miranda, age 32, died suddenly, February 2024, I felt transported into a completely different universe, which I call in the book the land of grief or the alternative universe, where your life is suddenly flipped overnight into something completely different and also completely dystopian and horrible.
Sure.
And so while I was trying to grapple with, you know, previously unimaginable pain of the grief of losing a child, I began to write it down as if I were reporting from another land, like covering a war from a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to try and convey to other people what this experience felt like, but in a very raw and graphic way, which I hadn't found when I had turned to other grief books, you know, looking for help, like, how do I make this pain stop? Answer, well, you can't really. But looking for some sort of advice or help that would get me through this grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find them. So
wow.
My goal was to just keep a record of this, and that's where the Dispatches title came from. It was always with me. I felt like I was in this other place, sending out dispatches of what it was like.
Thank you for that, by the way. Did you feel that, was it Peter, your stepfather, and Barbara, your mother?
So Barbara Frum was my husband, David Frum's mother, and she was a very famous Canadian broadcaster.
Yes.
And my stepfather, Peter Worthington, was a very famous editor and foreign correspondent. So yes, both of us grew up in journalism.
And do you feel, I mean, because I probably would have thought this, and I love to write. It's helped me through grief. So do you feel like what a gift, almost like, not, I want to say preparation, but just this foundation for handling this unimaginable?
Yeah, I mean, people have asked, was this cathartic for you? And you know, I have to say no. It was just a need I had to do, and it originated very selfishly. I just had to write about it. I had to describe what I was going through. And then as it got written and further along, and I didn't know what it was going to be. Was it an article? Was it something I never published? Eventually it became a book. It helped. What it did do is keep me connected to Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
I felt as long as I was writing this and about my experience, I felt close to her, if that makes any sense at all.
It does.
And then as I showed it to other people, earlier drafts, like, you know, other grieving mothers, whom, of course, you meet in this new land, they said, one of them said to me, thank you, now I have something to show people. Because, you know, often you can't articulate it. Right. You can't explain it to people who haven't gone through something like this. And I think many, many people feel very alone in their grief.
Sure.
And as the world passes on, as it does, as your friends move on, as they do, they kind of have this same universal idea that, well, you know, I'm really sorry this happened, but you'll get through it. You'll go through these stages. And, you know, months, a year later, they can be even kind of surprised that you're still absolutely devastated. And there are no stages, and there is, you know, there isn't a lot of hope either, well, or acceptance.
There isn't. And Danielle, I feel, and I've lost several people, both my parents, step-parents, I feel it's a personal journey, and no one can really tell you, like, oh, the time's up, you know, you've grieved long enough.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you, what I think happens, and when I've spoken to parents sort of further along this wretched path than I am, they say it's more like you learn to contain it. You absorb it. You don't, people always tell you, you know, grief is something you have to get through. You have to face it. And I agree. You totally have to face it. But I don't know that there is another side to it, except that you are able to cope better with it. But I've sometimes likened it to having like a chronic disease. You know, there'll be moments where you'll be in the moment, you'll be laughing or enjoying something, and then suddenly, you know, the old war wound or the kidney flares up and you're in pain again. And you just get used to the pain in a way that you just have to learn to get used to the pain, and you sort of stop talking about it, but it's always there.
Yeah. Well, did you find that you were, maybe not at that initially, but did you find that you were really tuned into how can I take the very best care of myself after a certain amount of time, like dialing into how am I going to move through this?
Well, actually what I found was, yeah, I was writhing in pain. At one point I was feeling suicidal, not that I was going to commit suicide, but just if you had known me before this happened, that would have been the farthest thought from your mind that someone like me could be suicidal. And I understood it. I suddenly understood suicide, because sometimes the pain becomes too much that you, not living seems preferable to living with the pain. So I did go and try and seek help, and you would be amazed at how hard it is to get help. I mean, I called a famous grief center in Washington, D.C., and they're like, you know, you get an answering machine, and they say, well, we'll have openings in 18 months. And I'm thinking, that's not going to help. Trying to reach out to therapists and psychiatrists, and they, you know, they all have waiting lists. And the only alternative I had was to either check myself into an emergency room and say I was going to commit suicide, because then they'll admit you.
Sure.
Or, as I eventually found, thank God, was EMDR therapy.
Oh, yes.
And that I found a counselor, EMDR specialist online, connected right away. She had an opening, and that was the thing that really eventually helped me, which is, you know, trauma therapy for PTSD, which is what someone in this type of grief is experiencing.
And I will say this, that 2024, here you're on the, you know, the pandemics in the rearview mirror, but there were so many effects. The aftermath was tremendous, where psychiatrists even left the profession, or there weren't enough resources because we had so much of a need because people were struggling so much. And they still are.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. So take me through the process. I know you said initially you weren't sure the structure of the book, but how did you decide, you know, I really like that it's the page count. I like the size of the book. Tell me about how these decisions were made.
Well, again, it began as these dispatches, scribbled things about what I was feeling. And then as they grew and, you know, I started to put them into themes, both the things that you just go through as a parent, as a mother, the horrible physical tasks that you're faced with, like having to see your dead child, mm-hmm. you know, like that's something you never expected to see. And yet you have to go to the funeral home and you have to look at them. And that is just an experience I would wish on no one.
Yeah.
You have to, 2 days after Miranda died, I mean, she died 2 days after Valentine's Day, and we'd been texting each other on Valentine's Day. She was going to an event, and she texted me a beautiful picture of herself. And I said, well, have fun. Let me know how it goes. That was the last text I got from her. And then we got a phone call, and, you know, and then 3 days later, I'm online with a funeral director saying, you know, which coffin do you think would suit your daughter best? You know, we'd just been exchanging selfies of outfits, and it's
sure.
It's surreal, and so you have to go through all these physical tasks, but then the emotional, that with a child, you see her everywhere. She's in every corner of your home. She's, you know, the first time I went to the supermarket and I started passing things that I once would have bought for Miranda when she was coming to visit, I had to run out of the store. I couldn't, I just went into a full panic
of
attack.
Of course.
So it's just, it's overwhelming. And you know, and they digitally haunt you too. Like Facebook will keep pelting you with, hey, remember this moment in 2018?
With Miranda, yeah.
And you just collapse,
know,
thanks Facebook. So it's just overwhelming. And the pain itself is, I described it as like being stabbed in the chest with an ice pick, because it's a real physical pain in your heart in addition to your mind.
Oof. Did you find that your family, you each handled it differently?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have three children. The youngest was 10 years younger than Miranda, so she was 22, and my mm-hmm. son, 2 years younger than Miranda, he's 30. And they were all very tight, and Miranda and my youngest daughter especially, she was like a much cooler younger mom than I was. But I was also, David and I, my husband, were exceptionally close to Miranda. And she was just such a life force and character within our family. And so when we lost her, it was like a hole being blown into this previous compact structure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the siblings had to deal with their loss. You know, I think they deal differently, but as intensely as we did. And we all kind of grieved separately, because you're just kind of sent reeling.
Yeah.
And one of the things I found most difficult as a mother was, for the first time in my life, feeling I wasn't strong enough to help my own children, that I was helpless to help them, because my own pain was so bad.
You were crumbling.
And that.
Yeah.
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 Oof. So through this process of writing this book, yes, it's not cathartic, but you felt that you needed to get this on the page. How has life changed for you?
Well, I did, you know, through finding EMDR therapy, that's really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
As my therapist, I asked her, what is the goal? Because obviously I'm never going to stop being sad or grieving my daughter. And she said, well, our goal is for the grief not to control your day and for the grief not to control your thoughts. And so that has really happened. I still do it. So that has helped me a great deal. And it is like, you know, any chronic disease or injury, you learn to kind of just live with it.
Right.
You can at times live in the moment and laugh, and then flares up and, you know, and you just stop. You learn to stop talking about it. But things remain fraught. Like, you know, things that used to be the most ordinary thing in the world when you meet another mother and she says, so how many kids do you have? And that's now an awful question.
Of course it is. Of course.
And I don't know, you learn to, like, you learn to try and not answer it.
Yeah.
Well, three, and then you hope you can steer the conversation another direction. And,
yes.
And finally, sometimes you can't. And then you feel like you're unleashing this nuclear bomb into the this otherwise ordinary conversation.
Yes.
Well, our eldest died.
Yeah.
And they go reeling. And then you feel sorry for them. Like, you feel embarrassed. Like, you feel like, I didn't want to do this to you. I was trying not to.
Yes.
So that is an exceptionally strange thing.
Yeah. And people feel awkward. They don't know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand it because,
yeah.
like, if you haven't been through this, you know, people don't know what to say. And I do talk in the book about understanding the need that people have. And it's a very kind need that they want to comfort you. They want to give you hope, you know,
mm-hmm.
they want to help you in some way, but they don't know how to do it. And my theory of this is, don't try and lean away from the grief. Lean into the suck of it. Like, what you want to mm-hmm. hear in this situation mm-hmm. is, I'm so sorry. This is horrible. I love Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know you did. And just be there in the terribleness of it. And,
yeah.
and the best thing you can do, honestly, is just hug the person.
That's right.
Show up for the person. Go
yeah.
for walks with the person. Listen to the person.
Yeah.
Don't try and tell them how they should feel, or, you know, very few people do this, but they, you know, try and put a spin on it, like, well, Miranda's in a better place.
Oh,
or
boy.
Another angel in heaven.
I know. You know? I know. My thoughts and prayers. And yeah.
My thoughts and prayers. Yeah, it's okay. You
yeah.
know, the other thing I do that is not helpful, and I would say this in a universal way, not just in grief, but people who say, hey, don't hesitate to reach out. You think, well, no, you're putting the burden on the person who needs the help.
Exactly.
To, you know.
Yes.
Well, what am I going to ask you to do? Go to the store and get me soup? I don't know.
I know.
So it's just a matter of just reaching out and saying, hey, how are you doing today?
Mm-hmm.
I'm passing by your house. Do you want to have a cup of coffee? You know, that kind of casual check-in was the thing I think I most appreciated.
Sure. Well, and some people are so uncomfortable with discomfort, with
mm-hmm.
with witnessing someone's pain and suffering. So they disappear sometimes.
Yeah, we had some good friends just kind of vanish because I don't think they could cope for it. I think when you're, you know, when a tragedy happens to you, and especially something as tragic as losing a child, people think you're kind of contagious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they come
oh, gosh.
Near you.
Really?
Might happen to them.
Oh, brother.
Or sometimes they ask very, you know, detailed questions about how did Miranda die?
Yes.
And I always tell them, and then you could sort of see the relief crossing their face, like, oh, okay, that's not going to happen to me or my child, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah, and I write about those different types of reactions that one gets.
Wow. So are you, maybe you're doing this, or maybe you're thinking about it, are you leading any workshops on moving through grief, processing grief?
No, I probably because I don't consider myself any kind of expert or qualified in this field. I mean, I'm
you don't
happy
have to be
to
qualified.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, happy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm always willing to talk about it, and I've been very lucky for me to connect to so many other mothers and parents who are in this situation. And
mm-hmm.
to me, that has been such a force of help because, in a way, they're the only people who understand and can speak the language of what we're all going through and have gone through.
Yes. I feel that what you have done, and again, this is maybe my writer's perspective, is by putting what you went through on the page, it will potentially inspire readers to do the same.
Yeah, if that's what will help them. I know it has helped. I've had just the response to this has been so beautiful to me. I've had so many parents and mothers write to me, and they're grateful that I was able to articulate their pain and in such a granular way. And one mother said, thank you, now I have something to show people that it's, it's a way of conveying to those who don't know, and also those who don't know but know someone in this situation, I hope it gives them a much better perspective of what their friend or relative is going through.
Is there any thoughts or advice you'd give someone that has gone through something similar?
Yes, I highly recommend EMDR therapy. That is for PTSD, and it addresses like the other, there are just, aside from the, you know, your grief, sadness, your brain is, I got very fascinated in the science of all of this. You know, your brain can't, part of the PTSD is the brain not being able to process the incident and the memory of it. And the other part is really thrown off kilter is your nervous system. So, you know, you get panic attacks. After she died, I got like very clumsy. You know, my brain went into a fog. I couldn't remember things. I shouldn't have been driving, you know, at some point, because you're just in this mental state and physical state that you don't expect, and you can't really control. So I found the EMDR therapy helpful, very helpful with that. And the other danger, and one of the things I also found out, is that the mortality rate of parents who have lost a child, and especially with mothers, goes way, way up. And you know, like many, an alarming percentage die themselves within 5 years of their own child. And some of that is, you know, you understandably you succumb to addiction. Some parents commit suicide. And others just, you know, it's like my clumsiness. They just get into accidents because they're not, I still don't make really good decisions. My brain is not as competent as it was. And it takes risks because it's not thinking about the consequence.
Well, also, sometimes it's hard to be present. Let's face it, when this first happened to you, or, you know, I had gone through something, or I know other people, the bottom line is you can't be fully present. You're physically there. Mentally, you've checked out. You're somewhere else.
That's a really good way of putting it. And I found travel a little helpful, which surprised me, because I always believe wherever you go, there you are. But there have been times where if I've gone to a completely new place that has no associations with Miranda, I've been able to be more in the moment and less thinking about her than I might have. But you're right. You're never, there's always a part of you that is drifting away, that is not there. And I think that does get better over time. I know it has for me. But there's never a day that I wake up and don't think Miranda is still dead. You know, there's never a morning where that fact isn't among my first thoughts of the day.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, for those who are part of your inner circle, they should understand, because, you know, you could be in a conversation and someone's telling you something and you haven't heard one word.
Yeah.
Right?
It happens a lot.
It happens a lot.
For sure.
Right.
Sometimes I'm saying, you know, sometimes I'll have a whole evening with them and I'll remember
nothing
of the evening. It's like being blackout drunk or something, except you're not. And you're, did I tell you this already? Wait, when were you over for dinner? Like, you just, it's, you're very skewed. Your brain is very skewed.
And that's just part of the shock, I believe, and the trauma of loss, especially the magnitude of loss, losing a child, unimaginable.
Yeah. So. And your whole system just trying to recalibrate and failing at it.
Yeah.
But again, one has to try and learn how to recalibrate it.
Yeah. Are there things you're doing now besides EMDR that just help soothe you at times?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is, I think this is true when someone close to you dies, you start to absorb some of their, what you remember as their best qualities. not even consciously. And so I find that when I do something I think Miranda would do, like she was a very empathetic person, she was always seeking joy. So I try and find beauty in my life. I try and be more empathetic. I try and do things that she would do. And in doing them, that keeps her alive within me. And it does give me comfort.
Beautiful.
And the other things, and I think as a mother, you know, even when I was planning her gravesite, which we created this really magical wildflower garden where she's buried.
Oh, beautiful.
Even while I was doing that, and as depressing as the task was, so long as you're still doing something for your child, you're still being a mother to that child.
I love that. Yes.
And when that ceases, you know, then I think, I don't know how I'll feel. I hope it doesn't cease.
No, I hope not. Well, listen, we have to wrap up, but where can people find out more about you, Danielle?
Well, first of all, the book is Dispatches from Grief, A Mother's Journey Through the Unthinkable. So it's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it anywhere. And if you want to reach out to me, and by the way, I will reply to everything. I'm a little slow right now at it, but I've been getting such beautiful notes.
Beautiful.
You can go to DanielleCrittenden.com. That's CRITTENDEN.com. And you'll be able to send me a message that way, too.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for calling in. I just really appreciate you taking the time. This is not an easy conversation. I can't even imagine. And I just want to thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate letting me talk about Miranda and talking to your listeners about
this. My pleasure.
So it's an honor to be on.
Absolutely. Be well. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Danielle Crittenden talking about her book, Dispatches from Grief, A Mother's Journey Through the Unthinkable. If you missed any part of it, it will be up as a podcast. We'll take a little break, and then we will be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.